something close to perfect pitch. This note was attractive to me, the E, yeah. Especially the bassings, because I hear Bo Diddley play a lot of E. Mm-hmm. I hear Duane Eddy play a lot of E. And the Virtues, Guitar Boogie Shuffle, all this rock stuff.
Right.
It sounded the richest and deepest and most exciting to me in E. So it was a natural outgrowth of adolescent hormonal reaction to say, yeah, E sounds like a good one. And I didn't even think about that I was trying to, but then sometimes I'd be in the car and something would flip me out, man. I would love it. I'd say, what key is it? And I would imagine, and I'd say, I think it's low enough, it's rich, it's probably that E thing.
Uh-huh.
And I just started playing a game where I'd sing what I thought was E, and I'd block things out, and then I'd turn the radio back on and see what key a song was in relation to what I thought was E. And I knew that other keys had a bland effect on my nervous system unless they were charged with certain things to compensate.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, sometimes, like for instance, C had that effect for a long time. Now I love C again, but for many years, C was a bland key for me, just the way I'm wired genetically or something. And so when I hear bum, bum, bee, bum, bum, I think I'm close, I would have my E, bum, bum, and I'd hear a song go, bum, ba-dum, ba-da-da-da-dum. I'd say, is that C? That sounds fairly mild and tame and peaceful and past the milk toast. And so I would get my E back and I'd take it, find a C in relation to my E and check, and I'd say, God darn it, it probably is in C.
Uh-huh.
So I had some modest successes, and then I started carrying a pitch pipe around because I wanted to be sure I was fooling myself. A little E blown
pitch pipe.
You take the notes that are, you know, take a one note thing is great. Don't like start with every note. Just find one note that's attractive to you.
Uh-huh.
And then I started listening to film score. It's great to do it with TV music because it's ever changing.
Right.
Always shifting stuff.
Jim and I do a lot of themes. We do the theme from Beauty and the Beast.
Who does?
Jim and I, the duo.
I see.
And we do Read My Mind.
That's a beautiful one.
Yeah. Jim's a real melodic player. I do all the accompaniment. He takes lots of solos.
That's great.
I get the moving bass line.
So let's say you're listening to something and it really has an effect on you. Don't let it go by if you're able to not find out what is the reason, especially if you start with key. And if it's not about key, if you say, well, it was just in G, I play lots of stuff in G, why should this matter? Ask yourself, did they just change into the key of G from something? Maybe it was the swoop.
Mm-hmm.
Change from where they were. If it's not about that, maybe it's the tone quality. If it's not about that, maybe it's the progression itself. You might say, God, I just love it. You know, have you noticed this? I can tell you that kind of guy that maybe you love a 3 minor to a 6 or some progressions.
Mm-hmm.
You start with those things and it all starts to piece together. But this tape started to run out before when I was mentioning things like about the tonal intervals. Mm-hmm. Is this deep? Am I close at all?
Mm-hmm. Right on.
We look at the board, and we hear this.
Sometimes I can do it.
I bet you're closer
sometimes
a lot than
I
you might think.
Yeah, but I just haven't been working on it. It's like, what do you pick to work on all day? You got this,
take
this,
a note.
This, this,
take
this,
this,
this
note. You know, just uh-huh. in your spare time, you're in a market, you hear something, God, that sounds good, what key? And you quietly blow into your little E pipe or uh-huh. A pipe or something, and you figure it out relative to that. You go, like if it's A, I hope I close my own. But let's say you have A, you're blowing your A, pipe, and but the song goes bum, da, da, bum, and it's got this cool bluesy harmonica or something, and you relate, where's that in relation to the A? You find out that was F, because this is F, I think. Yeah, bum, ba, da, da. But in net relation to A, A is its third, so you would have to track down. Bum, bum, bum.
Right.
It gets your sense of relativity slightly together when you have only one note as your fixed thing that you're using as a reference to find everything.
So Charlie and I have been, Charlie Wizard,
yeah, uh-huh.
We've been doing a lot of different things, just experiments, but one of the things we've been talking about is this idea of the movable do. So back to that idea of, say, we're trying to identify the 9th and the 13th, or the, say,
right.
the flat 9th and the 13th, are you using those syllables?
No, I don't use any syllable. I don't want syllables, because
for
me it makes it just tougher. I want identification so that everything works as a unit. If I hear a chord, I want to know if the root's on top or the ninth's on top.
Mm-hmm.
A, in relation to itself. B, I want to know what note that is in the key. If
so
I'm
say there's just a little six-note melody on a piece of paper,
right.
and you're going to look at that, and you're just going to go ba, 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 ba.
Yeah, it's the tones of the key. Like, let's take Norwegian Wood. That has a very interesting melody because it gets crazier at the end by
mm-hmm.
far. Let's say you played an E, and you start on... You'll see.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good read, though, that it's something different.
Natural.
Let's say it was in E. It starts on the 5th. We'll start real high on the 3rd string.
Mm-hmm.
what I want to know when I look at the paper and see the symbol is what tone in the key it is.
Right.
Not what tone of the chord yet at all. So it's the fifth. And then we sense the distances between the other tones of the scale. Five, six, five, four, three, two, three, pardon me, two, four, three, one, flat seven. Flat seven, four, six, five, nine. I don't know what that interval between four and two, pardon me, and six was. I could care less, frankly. All I want to do is be able to grab the tones and hear them.
That's kind of how I've been approaching it. I don't have any, well, from my classical thing in college, I remember the do, re, mi thing, but I didn't lock it in.
When you're not with the guitar, here's something to do.
The number, though, I do just like you did.
Do this away from the guitar. Take one of your favorite positions in the major scale that you can really see in your mind easy. Take a key that you like, same key as your pipe, maybe, or whatever you use. Sing it. Picture it, because you can do that. If you really work hard in your head, you can actually hear the scale and see it at the same time, because it's a familiar item. You could, like, say it was E. You can see. Okay, then start a melodic pattern, simple one, maybe. Things that you could find fairly fast if your hands were on the axe.
Right.
Number the tones, go slow enough to where you're going. Five, four, three, and here. Say three, check yourself, say three, that means one would be bum bum, three by my figaro, one, three.
Do you have those devices, tunes? Because I've been doing that a little bit, like
with songs?
That's six.
I do them as a last resort. I try not to do any songs because I just want to see the board, but
yeah.
As a last resort, a song isn't a bad way to go.
Yeah, just to have a backup.
I've got a list of them in the file. Run up against the stone wall. Try first without relying too much on the song.
Uh-huh.
Take the easy melodic patterns that are stepwise with a modest, like that's a modest leap of a third that goes, but it's so easy because it goes back to where you just were. What does that do? It entrenches the fifth stronger in your mind.
Right.
The fifth note, not the fifth interval per se, although it's a fifth interval if you go back to the tonic to relate it. But just as a note, it's just, and you focus on four. Then you might check yourself and say, well, that's four. I should be able to imagine a sus four chord that goes bum, bum, doom, bum, or I want you to. You know how we've heard a lot of sus four to three?
Sure.
Everything you can think about that makes a note come alive in your mind, every note of the scale. You want to fall in love deeply with every tone of the scale to where it means something by itself.
I
it has
know,
lots
exactly.
of tentacles out there in a positive way.
Right. Okay.
And it starts to happen, man.
Right. Are you having a cancellation after me?
Not supposedly.
Not supposedly. Well, I'd be happy to, you know, purchase a second hour here because
well,
I got a bunch of stuff.
If he doesn't come, then we'll accept that.
Because I don't want you to feel
if he does,
so
then we'll. In fact, let's do this in the thought that he might show up late because I've been late before, and he might just be doing that because it's not unfair, I guess. And easier for me if everybody was on time. Then I could. Anyway, it's not. So, Kevin, when might be the best for us to? 4 weeks, 6 weeks, you tell me.
4 weeks, yeah.
Is 7 o'clock still a good time?
Yeah, it's probably going to be fine.
Great. So I'll just write it. October 19 is 4 weeks from today.
Let me think. It could quite possibly become a bad night on a Thursday, though, if I start working.
And
so,
how about Monday?
How about just earlier in the day? Is there
earlier
any
in the day? Yes, we
could
do that.
Because if I can get down here, say, by 3 or 4 o'clock, I could make it back for any dinner gig or anything.
Let me see what I can do in that regard.
Okay.
The Send in the Clowns, what's happening here is it's a basic outline. I use these X's like in the book in the squares. And hopefully it'll make some sense. And you have to add little repeated melody notes here and there, but the basic shell of it is there.
Okay.
Earlier in the day, let's see. I don't want to bump anybody on this. So you'd prefer, say, 3 o'clock, for instance? Oh, I can't do that date. 4 o'clock?
Yeah, that's probably fine. Sure, if it's 5, I'd be back by 6.
I'm usually not running horrendously behind at all by the middle of the day, because everybody's been on time, and even if I had some difficulty, I know I can't get too crazy in the middle of the day and fall too far behind.
Mm-hmm. When do you start your first student?
12 o'clock.
12.
I'd say 12 or 1, it's just 4 weeks from today, it's all jammed in there. If you want 12 o'clock on a different day, I might be able to accommodate you there.
I kind of think maybe I should. The more I think about it, just in case, because I'm just having an instinct about it. Analyze numerically.
Analyze numerically, and then transpose to at least one other key. Write out your arrangement in the new key below. Well, you need to. Too busy for that. Cool. So 12 o'clock, huh?
If possible. I'd rather not wait longer than 4 weeks, because this last month seemed like about 2 years. So.
Okay, I'm going to do that. I'm going to write it on it. I mean, 12 o'clock, I'll write it on this top of this.
12
on a Wednesday?
That's fine. Wednesday's
fine. I warn you, you'll be my first student. You ever been my first student?
No.
I get up, typical thing, I got to bed very, very late, got up at about 11:30, because I teach at 12, cleaned up, shaved and stuff. I'm out here at about 5 of 12, but if you were to ring the bell at like a quarter of, sometimes I'm not even out here, so safest thing is no sooner than, say, 5 of, just for your sake, so you're not standing at the gate, gee, did Ted forget today?
Okay.
Normally, at any other time, you could show up as early as you like. It's a big race with the clock. And every time I say, well, you're not going to race the clock again, are you? It's 85,000 days in a row of racing the clock. Teaching days. You're still teaching, yes?
I'm teaching, and I know exactly what you're talking about. It's really tough. I've got a couple of students that insist upon staying longer, and I've got people waiting outside the door. And I teach in a store, so I have my own studio in the back of the store. And
insist meaning they're just so hungry, they, oh, show me that.
Yeah, I've got a couple young guys. They're all teenage guys. Basically, I have one young girl who's 9 years old, and I had a young boy who was 7, and he just would have too much trouble. He just wasn't ready to play guitar yet.
So it took longer just to get the things across, right?
Yeah, we just didn't really make any progress, so he faded out after a month. But I'm enjoying it a lot. I'm really interested in pursuing it more. Some more interesting things are happening. I'm leaving the Hotel California with the amorous couple upstairs.
And, oh, yeah, right.
You know, I found a house. I've rented a house. It's a beautiful little house in a little avocado cluster in Ventura, up above Ventura College, which is a nice area.
That's pretty wild.
And it's a 3-bedroom house with a garage. And I'm renting 2 rooms out to 2 women. I'm interviewing women right now to rent the rooms. They'll share a bathroom. And I have a garage again. And I'll be building guitars and working on instruments. An occasional piece of furniture for income, probably.
By the way, that topic about seeing the board and all that, how about we call it fingerboard solfège?
Because
that's what it is. Or I also call it the inner fingerboard. You carry the fingerboard in your head and you're singing it. And so
yeah.
Well, you'll keep me apprised of your progress in that regard.
Definitely. So anyway, that's progress there. I picked up some of these technique videos that are out.
Like Frank Abali and fellas like that?
I got Frank's. I got Emily Remler's.
She's one of my pals. I love her playing. Does she do a commendable job? I mean, she teaches stuff on the video?
You know what? For where I'm at right now, it's real accessible stuff. Real accessible. She's funny. She's got that East Coast kind of, hey, this is it. You got to have a serious left foot. You got to tap the foot.
Yeah. Like that. She's New Jersey and New York.
Is it New Jersey? I didn't know for sure, but she said New York. So.
She's that way. She's great.
I really got a good vibe from her on the thing, you know, she just seemed like she's just talking to the camera, you know, and that she does this thing, let's see, who is it?
Has she got the laid-back, cool blues feel down?
Oh, yeah,
You got it now, too. That's nice to hear you doing it.
Oh, I'm working on all that stuff. She does it,
We talk about it a lot, she and I, that time is the most, for me, tone is actually first, and time is second. They're close neck and neck. There are 3 things, it's funny, they all begin with the letter T. I might have told you this before. Tone, if a guy's got a great tone, and time, and taste, you know.
Yeah. Hey, it's stuck, I agree completely, you know. And tone is so tough, you know.
Different rooms.
I got this, look at this monster digital little thing. It's this small and it drives me crazy.
Is that the quadriverb?
Yeah, the quadriverb, you know,
because there's so many options.
Uh-huh. Delay and EQ, and I got all these parameters. I read this manual constantly. I get the thing sounding so hip in my room, and I go to this hall, you know, And it sounds like shit, it sounds awful, and I'm constantly fiddling with it. I would love to somehow get past that, you know? It's just, it seems like guitar players are always fussing with their sound, always, you know, knobs and this and that.
Yeah, it's true. I'm trying not to use one for now, because I tried a simpler Elise's thing, and I couldn't get the sound I wanted. I said, gee, if this is happening already, then I better wait for a while till everybody knows the hip way and it's common currency, you know?
I can get it, though. I'm getting it. I've got, like, you know the machine?
I only know of it. I mean,
it's got 3-band parametric EQ, 5-band parametric EQ, 11-band graphic.
You mean so you can have 3 different settings that you can click into? Is that
Well, in any particular mode, you pick one of those EQ types, depending on the particular room, the sound, if you need graphic.
That's nice that it's so flexible.
Oh, it's too flexible. It's got, you know, I don't think I would ever exhaust the possible combinations of effects and things.
5 is good. 5 I would go with first, the 5-band as a starting.
5-band.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is the one that I tend to use more. The graphic is, I don't know, it doesn't...
Parametrics are wonderful, but there's so many variables.
Lots of variables.
Until you find which cue you want and all that
right.
stuff.
Ooh, my goodness.
Do you ever have the Yamaha, play through the old Yamahas that had the parametric?
I have played through those.
GP8.
Gem plays through GP8. They have the GS6 now.
I have
the new one.
I forget, G100, G1000,
yeah,
I forgot.
Yeah.
Early 80s amps, good sound, but I never could... I remember, and it wouldn't sound right in this different room.
I'm thinking of Roland. Roland is the G-series. Yamaha is the X-something.
Beginning in the 80s, they had parametrics. They were the first major company. But every room was so different. It was like,
yeah. So, question for you.
Sure.
She does this thing. She talks about bossa nova rhythm. I got both of her videos. She's got a Latin one, and she's got a bop and swing.
Wow.
And
are they expensive? Are you buying these, or...?
It's an investment. I spent $250 on videos. You
wow.
know, I thought about it for a long time, and I thought, you know, I went to the NAMM show and previewed a bunch of them, and I thought, there's a lot of good material here, you know? And these are people that, I got Joe Pass's.
I hear that's fun, too.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. Joe's not, I don't think, necessarily aligned as a teacher, necessarily.
Uh-huh.
But he's got some interest. I like his playing more than what he talks about. I just take his licks off the thing rather than... Because everything he talks about, he repeats himself several times, and I pretty much understand all that stuff.
That's great.
But Emily does this, she does the tune How Insensitive.
Uh-huh. And she talks about keeping her thumb on the beat at first or not?
1 and 3.
1 and 3, yes, exactly.
Period. She
uh-huh.
said that's the only way to play bossa nova. Always 1 and 3.
Yeah.
All the syncopation
uh-huh.
happens over here.
That's right. But she plays other things where she changes that, other kinds of Latin grooves, not bossa nova.
That was my question for you. A samba is basically a 1 and 3 accent on the bass, but it's a faster type of bossa nova?
It seems to me like the American samba that I feel, because growing up with Marvin Gaye and R&B, I'm more of an R&B guy than a real strange Latin. I mean, I hear Latin grooves that are so strange for me, I don't even feel them. I respect them, but I don't feel them.
Yeah.
But I can feel... It's like a fast bossa nova, because if I slow it down, I'm on 1 and 3. I'm playing back the quarter notes. If I speed it up. So it's like, but it's an American accent, so on 1 and 3. And I don't think those guys do that. I think they anticipate 1 and 3 a lot of times.
And Charlie's done a lot of study.
Charlie's
on Latin
into
rhythm.
That, yes.
He's really into that. We worked
it's
out on that a little bit.
It's good.
And he's working on this Latin thing, which is like, I don't know what, it's like it's the upbeat of 2 and it's on 4, or it's 3 and the upbeat of 4 or something. The bass, he's got it happening though.
I've heard guys that can do it. Some Brazilian people that I met, they are fantastic. It sounds wonderful.
And it's like this. It's like, you know, it's just pulling you along,
yeah,
this upbeat
good.
Stuff. It's just
it's
like,
wild, man. It's
it
got
is.
To be so far. Try and, if you ever run across albums, cassettes, videos, anything by a guy named Toninho Horta. It's spelled T-O-N-I-N-H-O. Like it looks like Toninho. Toninho. It's pronounced Toninho or Toninho. They don't even pronounce the other N. His last name is spelled H-O-R-T-A. It's pronounced Huerta, Huerta.
Mm-hmm.
He is so cool, man. You'll love anything he does.
So what's he play?
Guitar and piano.
Uh-huh.
And sings, writes. Mainly he's a composer, and he just writes beautiful, great chords, great melodies, great rhythms. He's just a sterling guy for Latin music.
Check it out.
He's big and famous in his own company.
I really feel it. I don't have it happening like I want it to yet. I mean, I have to learn about it and think more about it. But I really like the feel, and it's perfect for what I'm doing. You know, people eating dinner.
Now, here's something to think about. Phrasing the melody like a soulful... You're singing a song to a woman you're in love with, and it's like the soulful melody would be like something close to this.
Yeah.
I mean, just putting the feeling that you... I can tell you have good feeling inside.
Check this
bringing
out.
It out, you know?
This is something I've worked up, and it doesn't have inside voices moving like you've got going on your album, and I wanted to ask you about that.
Feeling's what's important.
Oops.
What is it that you want to ask me about with this? It's all making sense.
I want to do this.
Question? No question? You just want me to see your progress?
Yeah, you know, I want to play that thing through for you. There's a couple sections in there like that where I want to play this chord like this.
I want to talk to you about what you just played. I want you to listen back on this tape or record it again on another tape. But I don't want you to listen to it. If you do re-record it, don't listen to it right after you play it. And then I want you, when you listen back, I don't want you to listen to anything but the top. And I just want you to notice that you're going... And I want you to think about if Emily was here, you know, you see the fire in her and everything, what she would say to you about that.
Uh-huh.
And then what
it's
I
straight.
Might say, it's not, you're not singing, man, like
well,
you're capable of. No, wait, don't take it too hard. No, let me say a few things more. You express music, and you have lots of expression that isn't even coming out yet.
No, this isn't ready. I'm getting
the structure
of the bass line and the top note.
You don't want to play one note that you don't love. There isn't time.
But when you're working up an arrangement
like that.
No.
You gotta form a habit of being vocal like where it doesn't become a habit.
Uh-huh.
It becomes a mental exercise and occasionally you say, oh yeah, I guess I'm playing with
so,
just
so
sing
it's
every
not a constructive
every time you, every,
scientific no, approach to
oh, it is, but still make the melody sing and it's doing, unless you're racing through something just to show me or
uh-huh.
something like that. If you it should still sing
okay.
somehow, you know. I mean, put it places, make that melody talk to you, man,
okay.
where you
yeah.
gotta love every note that you hit as best you can.
Right. Yeah.
It makes it more fun.
Yeah, it'll get there, definitely. But I was just more approaching it like, okay, I've got...
It's good bass line, nice motion.
You know, but there's nothing happening inside except a little...
If you came out here, man, and you said, look, this is my arrangement of Georgia, I'll get a new key so it sounds fresh for this song. Let's try this key. Feeling what he's playing. And it's not stunning, but at least you can tell I'm trying to express a vocal, like quality in the line and top.
Mm-hmm.
It's important. We don't have much to work with here, man, to make it really attractive for tunes like that.
Yeah.
We have one sound and a little bass kind of rumbling around. It's not like we have the orchestra with all the tones of oboes and flutes and the whole bit.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of the guitar is you can synthesize all that stuff into sort of like, what did Segovia say, looking at an orchestra through a reverse pair of binoculars?
I think that was Beethoven's thing, man. Segovia kept it alive.
Yeah,
it's true. It is an orchestra, but still it still comes across as a unified instrument. It's one timbre, and then it's like, we have to at least try to be vocal because that's one of our advantages. It seems like it's a good striving point. See, you could have played a simple set of chords like that at the beginning. You would have said, Ted, I'm not playing any fancy chords. Isn't this bad? And I would have said, no way, man. I'd say, because I'm feeling that you're a singer, man, with a guitar player behind you.
Okay.
Could you feel that was singing
oh,
a little better?
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks.
I hadn't plugged that thinking in yet. I was just coming more from a straight.
I don't mean to be too critical.
No,
you
I'm
work
just
hard,
trying to
you got
it.
This one level, and I'd say, okay, that's good, but now.
No, that's cool. That's why I'm here. That's all right.
Don't be alarmed if you make lots of goofs when you're trying to add that element to things, man. I'm still goofing a lot when I try it. I'll try to get something and I can't hit it right, or
yeah,
I'll try
it
and then I find out it doesn't sound right even when I try it. It just comes across as a guy who's heavy-handed for a moment. You know? Tried for something that doesn't even belong. See, there were four melody notes in a row that went, like, oh, sweet song, please.
But, you know, I noticed you do that on your recording. It's like
forget
a block chord type of thing,
it's
man.
Terrible.
It's like a...
Don't go by my recording. I wasn't into this then, man. It was terrible. In a lot of ways, it's awful in that sense.
Yeah?
I did. It was 12 years ago, man. I
didn't
know better.
It's almost like it's like a solid push in some sections, though. You don't think this should happen.
Let's put it this way. Your standards change. Now, if I heard that, I want to hear that with a vocal line above, see? I don't want to hear not too much of this. It's too much, man. It should be... It's more soulful, man.
Yeah.
I tell you, it just feels better. The listener will know it, even if they're not a musician. They can feel that somebody's getting down with the tune more.
You gotta keep that bass right on.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where it anchors everything.
It's cool. It doesn't have to be a profound bass. It can just be a simple doubling repeats.
Yeah.
Everything. It's more about the feel, the time. When we say time, we mean the feel, the groove.
Right.
And the groove has to do also with the vocal, like top end, if you're gonna be playing solo guitar in that kind of a groove. Other things, vocal isn't... If you're playing, you said you want to talk about these things. These things have a singing quality if you even add just a little vibrato and stuff.
Uh-huh.
But they're not as... We're not syncopating things that aren't syncopated by nature. If the line goes, I'm not hearing as, you know, all these wild syncopations, it's still going to be metrically, but the notes have to carry the day, man, good tone.
That's one of those cycle.
This is actually a cycle of descending thirds and then ascending stepwise sequence. Like that's F, D minor, whoops. So that's like going, and then it's third high would be G minor to E diminished, A minor to F, B minor.
Cycling thirds, okay.
Yeah, ascending units. It's mildly vocal in that sense. It's more still about the notes himself here. Now that little kind of thing is more like the gospel vocal. Any little hammer-ons.
Uh-huh.
It's fun to kind of manipulate it in that regard.
Do you happen to remember that little flurry of harmonics? I think it's at the end of Send in the Clowns.
If I think back, I might be able to do anything.
It's
oh,
up
yeah,
high.
I know what happens
it's
there.
Voice
yeah,
high.
I use fifth harmonics to get this, those sounds.
Yeah,
I'll show
yeah,
you.
No, no.
Stay, get back on the chair. It's like, no, it's not coming to me.
Do you have that happen often?
Very, very. This gentleman's so busy, he probably just forgot. He's the kind of guy who might have to stay up 24 hours in a row sometime because of his job.
So you're hitting two notes with your first finger? Are you covering two notes? With, like double stopping?
Okay, wait. You want to know about the end of Sending the Clowns, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, for instance. Things like that.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
No.
That's what I did on the end of that song.
Maybe it's the beginning of it. It's a classical sounding thing. It sounds like one of those cycles. Dee-doo-da-da-dee-doo-da-da-dee-doo-da-da or something like that.
Maybe it's in tandem.
It might
like
be
that.
The thing. Oh, that's pretty good.
But that isn't what you were thinking of, huh?
No, that's nice too. I'd like to get them all down, you know, the intros and...
Like I'm here, I'm... What I'm doing is Travis picking. You know what, like a...
Yeah.
You know that... Do you play these kind of styles a little bit?
I have.
Perfect. That's all I'm doing up here. I'm going. No, so this is going.
So those are actually just fretted notes on top, but you're accenting with the harmonic.
And I'm putting them in syncopated in the same rhythmic style. I didn't realize it till later. That's what I was doing, was Travis picking it.
Uh-huh.
With the low D, it helps you with this. It's more resonance. Slowly, it's taking this chord.
Doubles.
Sure. So we hit chime and note, two strings apart, lowest string and second string, chime on the lower string. Okay. Chautauqua switch straight up, and then it'll get, sure, it'll bring the other chime out a little bit. So we're going to hit the second string at the same time we do the chime. Then we're going to chime the third string. Then I'm adding the first string in between. Try to see your shape. Let's hear just the chimes all by themselves, all the notes. Let's hear four notes, one at a time.
See, what's happening here? That's one.
There it is. Just chimes. No, no, just chimes. Keep going. Keep going. Each one. What this does, this technique, maybe you've noticed, it cleans up your left hand.
Yeah.
Have you ever had to pull your hand away after doing it? Yeah, it's actually harder on your left than your right. So once you're sure that you're getting good chimes, then it's like, you know, I'm hitting strings four and two. One of them's a chime, of course. Then string number three, then one by itself on the off.
You're able to, your finger looks like it's almost straight up and down to me.
You mean like this?
Oh, no, vertically,
I mean,
but it's...
Oh, you mean this way?
Yeah.
No, it's at an angle.
It's double stopping.
Both backwards and to the board
that
itself.
That technique still gives me trouble.
You're a candidate, though, Kevin. It looks good, actually. Your chime has to be one fret higher on string number three in your right hand. No, I'm sorry, right hand. You weren't outlining the form, just so. There it is. Yeah. It's like right off the end of the fingerboard to get it really loud. Right. Let's put just the bridge pickup on for a second. See how much is the machine, how much is the operator. Get a funny chime, like a pineapple note, then that means probably your left hand isn't quite doing that.
For now, I'm going to do this.
Okay. Right, you got to see that third string on the right fret. There it is. So that's all I was doing. Man. It's not hard,
it's
is
nice.
It? It's simple.
No. The thing, it's right. It seems like that one that I was doing. You gotta grab the shape perfectly.
Oh, that's
to
true.
The next shape.
But sometimes you have a moment to readjust because you started and you go, oh, I didn't make it. And you add the finger at the last second.
Yeah.
You know what's wild about your particular guitar? It looks like it's slightly thicker than an old one. It looks deeper.
Thicker binding?
Yeah, I think it is. I bet it's, if we measured them, it's slightly thicker because the binding looks so thick.
It is.
And the inside looks the same thickness as normal. So
Maybe
they've expanded them out just a touch. Sure looks hip. That's the trucks, by the way, the floor shaking.
I'm used to it, my part.
You're near the
wall
trucks,
is shaking.
Oh, really?
I've got a couple trucks upstairs.
I hope it's not. I hope it's Rich by 9 o'clock. Hi. Good, Rich. Looks like great. Well, somebody will show up an hour, you know, sometime. So.
Uh-huh.
So,
quick question.
Yeah,
did we
time.
Get into those, the papers on V1 and all that stuff, you were going to pull that stuff out? Did you grab that? Or?
I wasn't going to go. I just thought if we...
Because we've got the harmonics and the...
I can tell you an entry level about it if you like, you know. V1 has to do with cluster chords. Have Have I ever given you any papers on close harmony chords?
That Bluesette comp.
Oh, okay. Sure enough, yeah. Do these sounds draw you in a lot? The closer, are they like just like any other chords? They're just good, but not better than the rest. Some guys are real drawn into V1. Some guys are like, yeah, they're all right.
Oh, I like the sound a lot.
Uh-huh.
But it's all beautiful, you know, used proper.
If you were to take D major 7 and say your basic chord, and then try to find the next closest together sound that you could make for D major 7, say with a parameter of this note still being in soprano, but you couldn't double any voices.
And they have to be a stacked thirds?
Well, it can't be because you've got it already. That is the stacked thirds. If you've got the seventh on top,
So like this?
Okay, now that's the same voicing, so it's just a new
string set. The request was.
Yeah, sorry about that. If you were to take it on the staff, forget the guitar, and write out the four notes, then you would try to look on the staff and say, what's the next smallest way to voice?
First inversion, you mean?
No, still the seventh has to be on top, so we don't know what will happen. All we know is we want the next possible, in nature, the closest arrangement of tones after this initial closest possible thing where 7, 5, 3, 1 happens. How would we go about that, Kevin?
And I want to hold on to this note on that.
And there can be no doubling.
It can go anywhere?
Let's stay there. There's no reason to jump all over the neck first. I mean, just stay roughly in the...
I'm thinking about things like this.
It's not about the guitar as much as it is about logic, so that you can know that you've actually found the next smallest one. It's not about what... Say you didn't know that chord. And you just had to use your mind to say, how could we find the next one?
The next one, it's combining all these intervals, it's keeping that on top.
And it's the next smallest arrangement, meaning it'll be larger than this arrangement in its overall compass, you know? Like some chords are larger than others.
It's the next smallest in
nature,
increasing size.
Yes.
Okay.
It's larger than what we're on, but it will be the smallest thing besides this.
Larger in number of notes?
No, it's still four voice, no doubling.
Four voice note chord with...
What methodology would...
I'm thinking of this.
Well, that's a different string. We're going to fix this string.
It's a string set.
Well, not in nature, but we'll stay there just to make it so you're not jumping all over the board. You can play anywhere in here as long as we... But it's not about, again, playing so much as it is about thinking. Once you think it through, then you'll know where to put the fingers.
Well, I'm going to look for the same note, so I've got...
But how do we know what notes to put next? How do we know what order they should go in or anything?
We don't.
But we can think it through and find out.
If we know where we're trying to go, I think.
All we know is we want the next available thing that nature offers us.
The next available thing. I'm keeping a four-note chord. I'm keeping the same note names, basically.
Yeah, not necessarily in that order, of course, or we're just still going to have the same thing. But we do know one thing. We've decided, so we won't be overwhelmed with the possibilities of zillions of voicings, that we're going to freeze the top note.
Uh-huh.
Not necessarily that we'll always play with that finger, but that we are going to still have the seventh on top. Again, you're playing as a guitar player. It's beautiful that you know some chords like this. It really is. But how do you know if that's the next smallest size in nature?
I don't have a clue. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure what I'm asking.
I'm not going in the... right direction. I'm kind of
you're out there on a mountaintop, man, and you got lots of time, and you're just thinking, what voices does nature really have for us on any instrument? You just use staff paper, for instance. I didn't do it that way, but suppose you did. Mm-hmm. And so you just say, hey, I don't know, let's find out. So you've got a new world. In this world, you've got three friends and yourself. Let's call you seven, your lucky seven.
Right.
You've got three pals. One of them is Big R. Another cat's called, hey, Mr. Five, and another guy's the three spot, you know? And these are the only four guys that can live there. Right? But these cats can live in all kinds of different ways, you know? Some cats, because they build tree houses and one guy's living down on the ground. So we want to know, we've got the first thing they did just for fun, they all lived real close to each other to see if they could stand to live next to each other. And now we're trying to see, they go, well, that's fun, but maybe next year we'll live a little larger, farther apart. But they can't bring in their cousins, they can't have girlfriends over yet, and just these four guys, you know, just pals for the summer, just kind of pounding around playing baseball and stuff.
The next larger, that's what's
next larger, yes.
Larger. Well, how am I getting larger if I'm keeping the same four notes?
You're not keeping the same register, per se. All we're keeping is one note the same, this one.
Uh-huh.
This D might be in this octave, might be in that octave. This F sharp could be in this F sharp. Well, we don't know.
I did that.
Right, but how do we know if it's the next available larger one? Maybe there's something else.
Oh, I see. Okay, so we take a particular tone and we move it down to the next available tone?
No, I'm not. So
okay.
Just forget. We've got doubling now. Right?
Doubling, but I'm just systematically moving everyone down.
Oh, you're telling, huh? No, I can tell right now, at least most of the time. Sometimes I can. I've just seen many of my students who are talking about the universe and how chords work. What do you have to?
The largest. No doubling.
Excuse me, one second. Look how far the bass is now compared. We're looking for the next larger,
so
right? That's a big leap in the bottom.
It went
right,
too
Kevin?
Far. Okay.
Yeah. So, Santa Barbara, what's happening up there? To get the headdress scene going with the feathers and stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks, bye.
How about this A is going to become this A?
And how will we know if it's sensible, but how will we know if that's the next smallest thing? We're looking literally to find out a method where we can be sure that we have found the next larger thing, I really should say, the next larger voicing that nature holds in store for us.
It's got to have something to do with analyzing, say we're isolating this tone, so analyzing these three tones and finding which tone can move and stay closest to the remaining two tones?
It's not a bad way of thinking of it.
So I thought first this one, just because I'm thinking root first, and that was far. That was a big jump.
You're getting there now. Keep this procedure up.
So then, but then
we'll
I jumped over to
fifth.
Teach
you a general. First you make it a specific, and then we can generalize it, and you'll see the whole way.
So say that I move systematically from the third. The next place I could put the third would be down here.
And how will we know if that's nature's next larger voicing?
Well, that would be it, because it's closer to the previous lowest voice than this would be. If I went for that A there, that's... Oh, no, this is the next closest one.
You're sure that's the absolute...
And then this would be the next...
How do we know there's nothing else available? You're on the track, but I want you to be ultra thorough because it's good for your head, man.
Well, then I'd have to move every voice in the same manner.
No, there's a simpler way. I want to tell you because time is precious.
Moving the fifth, yeah, moving the third.
Here's what you do. But you've done well to get this far, okay? Let's say we look at it. We make this empirical thing. Only because we want to try and see if it has validity. We say, we're going to work with another tone as a fixed thing. It'll be the bottom one because that determines the outer compass. So you started doing that. Let's say we're totally systematic. We go to seven. That's a tone in the chord, right?
Yeah, but we're doubling.
That's right. So we come down. None of these are available. The next available tone has to be in the bass.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Five.
That is the next bass note that is available in nature. Once we've got, now take anything away.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have five and sevens on top.
Right.
Fives in the bass.
Mm-hmm.
Now we still have to fill in a root and a third. You might say, well, that's easy. We can see them. But we don't know if that's the next, if that's the only available way. I don't mean guitaristically, but I mean in nature.
Right.
So first, of course, you would look here and say, well, if I put the root here and the third here, that's normal. What if I try putting the root here and the
third there, and then you see, well, that's crazy. That's just those two notes backwards.
Right.
From where they, so given this string set, it looks like we only have one choice. Then if you move five over here, you say, well, maybe there is a different way to put the root and the third in between them. It could revoice. But when you really check it, there isn't. It still ends up with the root inside and the third inside. They can only live one place.
Right.
You can see it on the staff. So in fact, that chord, the one you played here, double stop, you have double stop,
oh,
don't
yeah.
you? And the one you played here, and the one that lives right there on the bottom four strings, where we just switch registers, all of those are what we call V2, voicing group 2. Why? Because that's the next thing in nature that's available.
V2 becomes
voicing
the second inversion.